This is the practical Q&A, so this is where we are looking to provide practical wisdom, tips, tricks from what from what little experience we have accumulated over the years, and things that we have observed in others, things that we have found in our own family that have been helpful. Many of these tips will come from Jessica, who obviously spends more time with the kids. But perhaps one of the things we can talk about, if there is time, is the way the dynamic of me working from home changes that, and how we need to think through that. I do also have a couple of questions that some of you have sent in, and then if there are any that you have that arise, please do let me know. As part of this, I did want to show you something of what I was talking about with some of the resources that are available. These are all ones that we have found at Augustine. So this is not like treasures that we've imported from the States. The biggest story, ABC, this is just like you're teaching a kid the alphabet with gospel basics. Like, that's really helpful. That's cool, right? So again, I can teach them that B is for B, or I can teach them that B means that everything was beautiful in God's good world, right? Age-appropriate stories for toddlers, these wonderful cardboard things, just lessons about Jesus. He's the Son of God. Basic things, but again, age-appropriate, or stories about God. And we can talk if anyone is curious about how, at least I believe, the second commandment against that prohibits creating images does not prohibit us from illustrating what Jesus in his humanity looks like. It does prohibit us from trying to artistically render God the Father. Okay, we can talk through that. This one. I don't know if there are specific authors, but it's a Crossway series. So again, we found them at Augustine.
No, those are from the States.
I've seen them in Augustine. Yeah. Augustine, just so you know, sometimes parents buy things out of stock, and so if you can't find it, they can also order it for you. Then as your kids get a little bit older, some of the cool things that are out there. I have the huge respect for a guy named David Powelson. He is the successor to Jay Adams in terms of biblical counseling. He's now with the Lord, hanging out with Jay Adams in heaven. But David Powelson is amazing. And he, together with others, have this series. They basically take like a biblical counseling topic and weave it into a wonderfully illustrated, brilliantly narrated story. Like, this is Gus Loses His Grip. When you want something too much. Or Gwen Tells Tales, when it's hard to tell the truth. It's just good stories, but you're teaching them incredibly important biblical principles. So, I mean, it's a win-win, okay? Different series, but also another one, Arlo and the Great Big Cover-Up. He tries to cover his sin instead of confess it.
That one's really helpful because he drew on his bedroom wall.
Right? Or Psalms for young children. It's just Psalms. And to be honest, if you're reading out of the Bible to a two-year-old, it's probably at a level that's too high for them. This brings it down. Wonderful example. These are still going. This is a series by the Good Book for Children Company. Still going for $50 at Kum Books, online for sale. The whole series of them. They're fantastic. There's one that I should have brought. You guys have picked up by now how much I like Andy Nicelli. Andy Nicelli is a brilliant author, brilliant theologian. He's got a book on the conscience that our Bible study has started working through now. One of his best books, highly recommended to adults. He made a kid's version called That Little Voice in Your Head. I feel like every parent should own that book and read through that book to their kids. Pilgrim's Progress is just an incredible story, but this one I think is really cool. It is a little bit more expensive, but especially if you start with your first one, you will get many years of reading pleasure out of this. It is Pilgrim's Progress, but the characters are animals, and it's just awesome. Our kids love Pilgrim's Progress.
So that one I'd say is really good from about age 5 or 6, but we have read through it multiple times. So once you get to the end, it's pretty easy to start from the beginning again. So it's definitely worth getting that big one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sorry, yes. I know these are all English, and you guys are
English. Yes. There are some. There's a series now that I've just recently picked up for Nathan. So, I mean, the kind of 3-4-year-olds, what's it called?
Clever Cub.
Clever Cub. So, Clever Cub is available at Augustine. They're just small little things. They're $30 a pop. Really good stories, nice illustrations, and they're in both English and Afrikaans. So, really helpful.
That other one we bought for Matthew with the Bible stories, like there was a volume one.
Sure.
That's in Afrikaans as well.
Yeah, so there definitely are Afrikaans options. Not everything is in Afrikaans, but there definitely are good options in Afrikaans. I'm not a huge fan of children's Bibles. I think most often they don't tell the stories well, and it's like the worst of Christian music. In their efforts to make it more popular, they've introduced subtle heresy. And so many of the children's storybooks are ones that I'm not excited about. That being said, if you do want one, I think the runaway best is this one. There is a dust jacket, but we threw that away. Called The Child Story Bible. It's by a woman named Catherine Voss. She is the wife of a renowned Reformed theologian, Gerhardus Voss. Isaac will freak out if he hears me say it that way. He said it's Gerhardus. But it's Dutch, and so it's softer than Afrikaans. Nevertheless, this is a really good one. Just understand, as you are reading through this, it is from the Reformed perspective. And so there are going to be subtle things like they believe Israel is the church. And so if you're just discerning, you'll pick up on that. But I think it still makes it it does not detract from the fact that it's a valuable resource.
So it's not a Bible with a chapter and verse.
Right.
It's a story. So you would work through the Bibles in story format.
Yes, which is what I think is helpful at a certain age. They can't yet do the, hey, let's read through the book of Ephesians as a family. They need stories. They need narrative. And so this is really, really helpful. Old and New Testaments together. And then when they do get old enough, kind of the rule at our home is when they learn how to read for themselves, they get their own Bible. But these days, there are wonderful kids' Bibles available. I know that's a little bit outside of this age range, unless you've got the most advanced toddler among us. But great formats, cool illustrations. Just there's really good resources out there. So why don't I start with some of the questions that we have that have been submitted in advance. And then maybe I'll just throw them all at Jessica. But how do you handle it when your toddler just says no to everything?
I don't know. I just ignore it. I'm trying to think of a proper answer. And an example of when a child says no, or I don't want to do that. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I don't think our boys will often just outright say no. I feel like they know better than that. But they will say, I don't want to, or I don't like it, or I don't want to do that, I don't feel like it. And my response is often, it doesn't matter. I've asked you to do it. You have to do it. And so if I am giving an instruction, I need to make sure that my instruction is right and good. And it's something I want them to do. Because if I give an instruction and they say, no, I don't feel like it, and then I decide, well, it's okay because I wasn't too serious about you doing it, then I show them that there is opportunity to disobey. And so when I'm giving commands or instructions or I'm giving them expectations, it needs to be a hill I'm willing to die on, because I'm going to force them to obey. I'm not going to give in. And so then the responsibility is with me to make sure that what I'm giving them is doable, they are able to do it, and that I'm willing to take the time to follow through. Because if they're going to say, no, I don't want to, it's not going to happen quickly. I'm going to have to sit with them and say, this is why I want you to do it. You have to do it. If you don't do it, there's a consequence. And so if I'm giving an instruction, I need to be willing to follow through on it.
Yeah, good. Sure, let me add 2 cents and then you are welcome to follow up. I have said to our kids consistently when they're young, I'll ask them a question when they're saying things like no. What is more important, being obedient or doing what you want? Because I have to phrase it in that it's helping them understand the heart dynamic of you're choosing to do what you want instead of choosing to be obedient. And so we'll often frame it in that kind of a way to help. And thankfully, I've got the good sense to understand being obedient is more important. Like, okay, but then you need to change your behavior now to follow that principle. So ask them that kind of question. What is more important, doing what you want or being obedient? And you can do that even with a 2-year-old. Yeah.
We've had some of our kids be like, doing what I want. So we have got the wrong answer. And then, you know, you have to follow up. And then
Third child.
Then you have to teach them, no, being obedient is more important than doing. But we have had the wrong answer.
And which is actually not a loss, because then it gives you the hard issue that needs to be addressed. Okay? Yes.
Because I didn't put that question in before, but that was exactly the question I wanted to ask, because you are at that stage. Mm-hmm. But it's literally as simple as, Eva, come, we have to go bath. No. It's not even like a difficult or a very like complicated. It's just, we have to go bath. No. Okay? But, you know, then he's like, I told me. Then we're like, okay. You need to wash yourself so you can bath or shower, but we're going to do that now. Like, do you then give a hiding?
Absolutely.
Because he does that with everything. Uh-huh. Like, even if we do, if he wants to do the opposite and you say, okay, let's do that, he'll still say no.
Yep.
Yeah.
So
just being defined,
the temptation for you now is to try some of those worldly substitutes where you're going to negotiate with him, you're going to bribe him, you're going to offer him alternative solutions that he might prefer more. You've given him an instruction. Stick to the original instruction. Don't alter it, sweeten the deal, soften the stick to what you asked him to do, and then follow through with the consequences if he doesn't. So you can warn him beforehand. Like I said, warning comes before disobedience. You can say, Yua, remember mommy told you, there's blessings for obedience, consequences for disobedience. Which would you prefer? You want the blessings, don't you? Then you need to choose obedience now. But if you choose disobedience, mommy is going to give you a smack on the bum.
Yeah.
Because I think, first of all, I'm myself, we're in that state where, you know, you can't give him a hiding for every single no that he says, which is wrong from us to think that way. But I mean, now it's 6 o'clock at night, you're tired now, he's just saying no the whole time.
Uh-huh.
So now you do the bribing and you do the other things, which is probably, you get what you want at the end of the day, but I mean, you're not doing it the correct way. So we just feel if he says no the whole time, he's going to get a hiding the whole time.
Mm-hmm.
But that's
literally the worldview you need him to live in. You want him to understand, if I disobey, there is a consequence. Not some of the time, not when mom's feeling she has the energy, all of the time. Because he's going to run everything that you ask him to do through that computer of his that says, oh, I don't have to obey because I don't get a consequence. You want him to think, if I don't, it's going to bring pain.
Uh-huh. The same. So, you know it's 6 o'clock, you know it's bath time. Like, why would you be defined every single night at 6 o'clock when you know it's bath time?
Because he can get away with it, and you've taught him that. So, 2 things. What I said to you earlier was just confessions out of our own doing exactly what you're doing. You make a rod for your own back. It's easier today, it's harder in the long term. It's going to be worse if you don't do it the right way now. And the other thing is what Jessica said in the beginning, I think you also need to just consider whether you're giving him reasonable instructions. If he's saying no all the time, you either have an incredible defiance that you need to deal with, or you've maybe given him unreasonable expectations for his age. So if he's too young to go off to the bath by himself, don't make that an expectation. Do what Jessica said. You've got to think through, is this a reasonable instruction that I'm going to give? Because if it is, and he disobeys, I have to be diligent and disciplined for it. Okay. Yeah.
You know, like you were saying, it's the same with all of us. If there is sin in one area, it will show up in all areas. And so if there's defiance at bath time, there will be defiance in many other areas. And so if you're not consistent, then, you know, eventually when you're struggling so much with sin, whether it's you or your husband or your children, it makes the home unpleasant, you know, and we want our homes to be enjoyable. Children sin, we sin, and yet there's still meant to be an enjoyment in our home and love and peace in our homes. And when sin is not dealt with, then our homes are unpleasant. And so, you know, if we are struggling with anger, it's not only going to come out when we are working with our children. It's going to come out when we're dealing with our husbands or dealing with, sorry, makes sense.
I'm a work in progress. So,
or when you're working with colleagues or your boss, you know, that anger is going to show up in multiple places. Our sin is never just confined to one place. And so it's the same with our children. If they're struggling with defiance or saying no or being slow to obey, it's going to show up in multiple places, and then life is just going to be hard all the time.
Just a follow-up on that is, because this is helpful, it's helped me think differently about maybe some of the stuff that I do.
Mm-hmm.
For example, like this is a cop-out, and you ask them to do something, like, for example, get in the bathtub, and they either keep quiet, they don't do it immediately, or they still want to be playful, and you just pick them up and you put them in the tub. They can, because it's, for example, Jamie, he's tall enough to get in himself. If I pick him up and I put him there myself, is that a form of enabling him to also not listen?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so you've asked him to do something and he didn't do it. So remember, that's why that standard of obedience is really important to help you think through those situations. Obedience, biblically defined, is all the way, right away, and with a good attitude. Right, all the way, right away, and with a happy heart. So he didn't obey you right away. That's disobedience. And so if you're going to give the instruction, you need to follow up with the discipline, because that was disobedience. And delayed obedience is disobedience.
Mm.
Absolutely.
And doing it while grumbling is also disobedience. They need to do it with a happy heart. Because that's the standard God expects from us. When we obey God, we do it right away, in the right way, with a good attitude. Otherwise, it's not proper obedience towards the Lord. And so we set the same standard of obedience for our children. And so those little things like bath time and bedtime and eating time are all really good times and opportunities for you to practice, so that when you're outside your home, it's easier. And so take them, even though they're harder and you're tired after work, take those opportunities. Teach your children the mantras of, you know, blessings for obedience, consequences for disobedience. They will get it. And you can even then explain, you know, if you obey now, this is the blessing that we're going to enjoy. If you bath now, then we get to have supper and there's time for us to read two books. But if you take your time, the consequences, we're not going to have enough time to do all the fun things you want to do after bath time because you delayed. So you can even show them, here are the types of blessings you're going to get for obeying, but here are the consequences you get for disobeying.
Mm-hmm. Great. Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah. Exactly. And you know what? I know it seems like a lot, but if you do it well, then you don't have to do it for many years. Then often, by the time they are through this preschool age, my kid doesn't need to get very many spanks. It's not like a daily occurrence. Sometimes she'll go a week without a spank. Because he's learned now. And so what you give yourself diligently to now will bear fruit in the coming season. So yes, but you're right. Thank you for the encouragement.
Yeah.
Yeah, I remember. I remember in the States, one of the moms there. So Micah, Matthew probably wasn't even born. Micah was still two, and she said, "If you put in the hard work, by the time there are five, the load gets lighter." Mm-hmm. You know, and when you're in the thick of it, 5 year old seems really far away. But for us who have kids who are over five, it makes a world of difference.
Right. Yeah. A couple of questions revolve around either kids ignoring when you are giving them instruction or claiming that they haven't heard. So they're either flat out ignoring you or they're protesting, "I didn't hear you when you spoke." One of the things that's helpful in the way that the Old Testament describes obedience is it's the same Hebrew word for listening and obeying. There's no distinction in Hebrew. To listen is to obey. And so for an Old Testament Israelite who wanted to be obedient to the Lord, they had to be diligent to listen for his voice, which obviously is in the Bible. But that principle applies to us as parents. A child who has an obedient heart is one that is diligent to listen. And so children can and should get consequences if they are not listening for your voice. Your voice should pique their interest immediately. When they hear you speak, they should listen up, even in a crowded room, because mom is speaking or dad is speaking. And their lack of diligence to listen for you is itself a form of disobedience and gets consequences as a result. So A, they must listen, and a failure to listen is no excuse. Now, obviously, you can tell if it's a crowded room. Like when it's Bible study, the noise in here is quite intense. And so if he really literally doesn't hear you, there's understanding. But in general, if they just say, "Oh, I didn't hear you," that's actually not an excuse. That's a problem. All right. Yes.
I was just wondering if your second point is going to be my point.
Well, why didn't you make it? And we'll see.
You know, Warwick was saying earlier that when you do give consequences and you do discipline, you need to be certain that your child is disobeyed. And so you don't know exactly what they've heard. And so you need to cover all your bases. And so in order to cover all your bases and to make certain, you tell them to look at you. Give your commands when they are looking at you and you can see it. Because sometimes you're just walking with them and they're next to you. Maybe they've got a song in their head that they're enjoying or something. And they really are so absent-minded that they're not listening to you, even though there's no other noise and they don't take that information in. So you cover your bases so that if you do need to discipline, you are confident that your command went out well and that it was received. And so you say, "Look at me," and then you give the command. And as their speech develops, you can even tell them to repeat it back to you and then have them go so that you have the confidence that if you do need to discipline for it, you can do it with a clear conscience.
Good job. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and sure. Sometimes,
but
yeah, and sometimes there were one or two commands which seemed like the same thing to you, but they only got step two, not step one, and so it's just helpful to make sure for your own heart that you have given the command well in a way that they're going to understand, that is helpful for them.
Yeah, I mean, what you said is right as well, and so don't forget, smaller kids can't have a string of commands. They have one command at a time. As they get older, you can give them multiple steps. Get into the bath and then wash yourself. And once you have done that, get out of the bath and dry yourself. But a three-year-old can't do that. Okay. Tantrums and meltdowns. How do you handle them? Do you wait for them to calm down? So do you have thoughts that you want to share?
So I think it's, you know, different when you're out and when you're at home. Tantrums are easier to deal with at home. We had the type of children where I didn't wait for them to calm down. I gave them a hiding for the tantrum. But if we were out, I'm small enough that I can fit in a passenger seat or a back seat with a child and be able to give a hiding. Warwick couldn't. And so it was interesting because we didn't handle that the same way. If I was alone with a kid, then I could take them to the car and give them a hiding. At church, the auditorium worked really well for me. It was soundproofed and no one else was sleeping in there. But at home, I would deal with it immediately. And then I don't know if you spoke about this, but if they responded, like if they screamed at me in anger because they got a consequence, because they threw a tantrum, they would then get another one. Crying because it hurts is one thing, but screaming at me in retaliation because they're angry would get them another hiding.
Yeah. So you do need to discern your kid and how they work, how they're wired. Our kids would very early on in the tantrum be warned to stop it. So, you know, the no, stop. So they would get that interrupting their tantrum. And there's a difference between raising the volume of your voice to be heard and shouting in anger. So I can use a dad voice to go, no, stop it, to calm them down, all right? So we would jump on that really early on, and our kids would respond to that well. Sometimes in the midst of the tantrum, if they're not listening, you can give a let me get your attention swat on the bum. So a consequence that is not the entire discipline process, but if you're going to yell at me like that, like Jessica said, there was a season that some of them would yell back at us. I'm still bigger than you. I'm going to bend you over that bed again. I'm going to spank you in the midst of you screaming like that. And that's going to get your attention, and you need to stop. Otherwise, if you keep this up, the consequences are going to keep coming. And thankfully, our kids would respond to that. But there are other kids that this is just like throwing fuel on the fire. The principle is you need to be able to reason with them. Remember, we've emphasized how it's the talking that is as important as the infliction of pain. And so if they can't focus on you because they are in an absolute meltdown, then leaving them to calm down can sometimes be a helpful strategy. But how you do that is important. So perhaps taking them to a bedroom and saying, right, you're going to sit here alone. You're not going to play. No books, no toys. Sit here, a cot, a play area, whatever. Calm down. And when you are calm enough that I can talk to you, then we're going to deal with this. There will be a consequence for the disobedience and for the tantrum, which is another form of disobedience. But I need you to be able to listen to me when I speak to you. That's the most important thing. However you get your kids' attention, the meltdown must be disciplined. That's not development, that's sin. Mm-hmm. The consequence must be dealt with, but you must know your child enough to know, how am I most effectively going to secure their attention so that I can speak to them about what's going on in their hearts? Anything else you want to add to that?
Right. You know, you are the one that teaches your child what sin is and what to call the different sins. And so with a tantrum, what that most often is just a lack of self-control over one's emotions. I'm not getting what I want, so I scream, I shout, I hit, I kick. I fail to restrain my emotions. And we all know what that's like. We have sins where we fail to have self-control. And so in the midst of that, you know, when you're saying to them, no, stop it, you can say that and you can say, you need to control your emotions. Perhaps you can't expect them to just flip a switch, but you are teaching them with your language what the sin is and what to do with it. Because we know for ourselves, we have to counsel our own hearts. I need to have control. And sometimes for our own heart, it's a stop it and do the right thing. And they need to learn how to make that change as well. But you are the one teaching them, this is what the sin is, this is what it's called, and this is what... And this is how it needs to change. And so you need to use your language. You need to call it what the Bible is, a lack of self-control. You know, don't just say, stop it, stop throwing a tantrum. Say, stop it. You are not controlling your emotions. Stop crying because you're not getting what you want. Do not shout at me because you are angry with me. You know, give them the vocabulary so that they start to learn. And I mean, even from two, you can start teaching them. You know, I would, that would be the first thing I did with the tantrum is, stop it. You are shouting at me because you are not getting what you want. You need to stop shouting at me. And then that would simmer them down, and then I could deal with the discipline part. But to just be reminded, you are the one teaching them what that sin is. And so give them the vocabulary that they need to understand it and to attach it to the concepts.
Yeah, good. Final comment on that, sorry, and then I'll give you a chance to respond.
So just to clarify, you would say like, okay, calm down, stop. And if they do respond and they do obey, would you still then give them a hiding for initially having that tantrum? Or have they obeyed because they're learning to control their emotions?
Depends where you are in the process. If you can see the storm clouds gathering, like you can see where this is going, the look on the face is coming and the body language is changing. Like I said to you, warnings should precede disobedience. Warnings don't come after disobedience. So you can, and it's really helpful too. I think that's part of the training that illustration I used reminds us to do. You can see and you can say, Daniel, remember, you need to control your heart now. I know you're unhappy, but use your words to talk to mommy. Don't scream and don't cry. Otherwise, we're going to have to deal with that with a consequence. So watch the storm brewing in his heart and preempt it with your warning and with your instruction. Coach him. Like Jessica's saying, and how to deal with his emotions. But once he crosses that threshold of he is just lashing out at you, he's screaming, he's biting, he's punching, he's throwing stuff, now you have transgressed. And so now there is consequence. Okay? All right. Good. There are some behaviors. I'll make this the final comment. There are some behaviors that you can stomp out. We emphasize heart change, but there are behaviors you can stomp out before heart change comes into effect. Like with our kids, whenever we noticed they started to experiment with hitting, like if you're going to start hitting your brother, we came down on that with a ton of bricks. It was just overwhelming force, right? So immediately consequences get doubled and we pounce on that thing. And within a week, that's gone, right? There's no heart change yet, but we want to make sure that is not a way for you to express your frustration with your brothers. Or screaming or biting. If you got kids that bite, like you don't need to wait until there's full-orbed biblical repentance. You're like, well, I guess we're going to have to endure this for the next 16 years. You can stomp that out. They're still going to have anger issues in their hearts. But you can go, you know what? The one avenue we're not going to let you express that is in biting. So if you bite, consequences get doubled or tripled, whatever it is. Overwhelming force. Squash it. Tantrums and meltdowns would be one of those. You are still going to have anger issues, self-control issues. But we're not going to let you, you know, like you've seen it online. Maybe you've seen it in your family. Maybe you've seen it in your home. Those absolute epic meltdowns, we're not going to do that in this family. Cool. All right.
So Danny?
Hold on.
All right. Oh, you got a thing.
In the last 5 minutes that we have, I'll let you ask any questions that you have. So, Danny, you've got first shot. You can then also ask any church-related questions that you have as well. Obviously, Jessica's not going to answer on behalf of that. So, questions to close us out. Danny.
When it, I don't know if other children did this, but when they start to copy you with consequences. So at first I noticed it with the hands, like if I would do hand smacks, she then not like she would, you know,
angry and hitting something, and when they're just like mimicking everything gets hit now. So then I just stop with the hand smacks. It's like, okay, everything is a proper discipline in a bedroom, because that's not just smacking stuff. But now, even with the hidings, then it's like the doll gets hidings and everything. And now she's just hitting everything. And I hear myself saying, we don't hit. And then I'm like, but you are mimicking what I'm doing. So do you think that's like just, if she's not angry and it's just like it will pass, or
So I have two things that I'll say, and then you can add your profound wisdom to.
Okay.
Slam dunk. So number one, I think sometimes we need to be more specific in how we speak. So don't say we don't hit, because that's obviously not true. We don't hit in anger, right? So mommy doesn't hit you in anger. Mommy hits you in love to discipline you. So change the language that you're using. And then the second thing is, if she's modeling good behavior, you wouldn't be offended if she had a doll and she was pretending to change its nappy or to breastfeed it or whatever it is. She's modeling the nurturing behavior that she's seeing from you. If it's that kind of modeling, if she's just now, okay, cool, parents spank kids, this is my doll, this is my teddy, I'm going to mimic what I see from mom. That's not necessarily a bad thing, but anything you want to add to that?
Yeah, I just wouldn't let her hit other people. Yeah. That's all. I'm like, yeah. Right. You know, even if it's a playful thing, we don't hit other people, and we don't give consequences to other people. But yeah, like Warwick said, if it's just behavior that, you know, she's imagining playing with her baby and her baby's done something naughty, so she gives the baby a consequence. Yeah.
Right? Yeah. Yeah.
I just had a question outside the realm of children, but with...
You can't beat your wife. It's not okay.
No. Grandparents. Like,
yes.
What do we do when we have a certain, rule in our house, and now they're at their grandparents, and now all of a sudden they can do that thing, which at our house, how do we navigate that?
So I think you need some discernment to think through what kind of difference we're talking about. Like at our house, our kids will have juice as an exception, as a treat. For the most part, they drink water. Not as a punishment, but we just don't want them having that much sugar. But when they go to Grandpa and Granny's house, man, it's the land of milk and honey. Oh, it's on a tap, man. Bought by the keg. But that's okay. We're not going to die on that hill. But matters of this is how we do things in our house, in our family, you need to be clear. It is not determined by the building that you are in. It is determined by the parental authority that God has entrusted those children to. And so the rules for my family go with me wherever my kids go. If they are not allowed to do a certain thing, that's true in my parents' house as well. Because it's not like we enter the threshold of my parents' home and all of a sudden now my dad's rules apply and mine don't. I am the authority. And you should, if you need to, have that conversation with your parents, your wife's parents, to say, hey, listen, here's the deal. In our family, that's not allowed. And you need to support us in that by not contradicting that. So here are our rules for our kids. And to be honest, if you're not going to abide by them, we're not going to come visit. Or if you're not going to abide by them, if you're not going to respect our rules, we're not going to leave our kids with you. That's not vindictive. It's just you will respect our authority. Otherwise, you lose the privileges, because grandparents don't have rights. They have privileges. Do you want to add something to that?
Yeah, I was going to say, when you go to your parents' house with your kids, you are still their parent. You are still their main authority. So, you see that pack of sweets coming towards your kids. You get in between them and you take those sweets and you're like, thank you for the sweets. You may have this after your lunch. And so you are still the go-between when it comes to authority. You still decide, this is what I want my kid to do, eat, have, behave. it's still your decision, even in their home. Because if you came to our home to visit us, you would still be in charge of your children. It's the same in the grandparents' home. And then, like Warwick said, if you're going to leave your children with the grandparents, you are going to have to learn to relax a little bit with some things, you know, because there may be, like in your home, you are like, there is not a shoe on my couch ever at all. But at Granny and Grandpa, you know, when you're not there and the kid climbs onto the couch with their shoes, Granny and Grandpa don't care. And so we just let those things slide. Just let it be. It's in their home. It's their stuff. If they don't mind footprints on it, then so be it. But then when there are authority things, then you are still their authority. And sometimes it means you need to sit down with the grandparents and say, hey, listen, this is what we want. This is why we want it done like this. Please, can it be like this way?
The other thing is you need to teach your kids that while they need to be respectful of other authorities, so you want them to be respectful of grown-ups, teachers, grandparents. They need to obey your authority primarily. And so as a practical example, we've taught our kids, no matter who gives you sweets, this is not a stranger danger thing, this is like your grandparents. Even if Granny dumps a whole bag of sweets in front of your hand, into your hands, you need to come to us first and ask, may I eat these sweets? I'm glad your grandmother gave them to you, but you still need our permission to eat them. So we've trained them in that. The other thing on grandparents, I don't know if it's coming for any of you. I'm convinced, I don't have a verse to back this up, but I'll fight you on this one. I'm convinced the only person who should be administering physical discipline is the parent. So as much as what we might bemoan the lack of corporal punishment, teachers don't beat their kids, I don't think the teacher should be using the rod, and I don't think a grandparent should be using the rod. I think that is a parental privilege you alone are supposed to administer. So there are other forms of discipline that your parents, as the grandparents, can use, and they can certainly inform you if physical discipline is necessary, but I think that is something that you as the parents should uniquely be handing out. Okay. Yes?
How do you deal with a preschooler who is able to now tell or give an account for a day or something that happened, but may lie or start learning how to lie? How do you explain the seriousness of that for them to understand that, you know, that it's an absolute no-go?
Sure.
So because they are also afraid of the consequences that come of,
right,
you know, not telling.
So lying always in our house gets you worse consequences. And we've tried to teach the kids, lying is going to make it worse. The way out of this to make it better is not through lying. In fact, and you're going to feel that now because, you know, your consequences immediately get doubled if you lie. The trouble is you have to be certain. Remember I said earlier, you must be certain of the wrongdoing. And so you must know that they are lying, or at least have a reasonable knowledge that they're lying. You can't just go, yeah, that sounds like a tall order. It's a bah. Be clear. But if you are clear, then punish it strongly so they get the idea. It's like biting. In this house, we don't bite. In this house, we don't lie. Whatever else may happen, however else we may do wrong, we are not going to lie. We're going to tell the truth. And that's the right way out of the mess that we make with our sin. Okay. Anything you want to add to that?
For the record, I find lying the hardest to deal with. I'll take a tantrum any day over having to try and deal with lying because you have to be certain. And, you know, even if you know that they're lying, it only comes right when they don't lie or when they repent or when they admit it. It's like the deepest of the heart issues that you can't fix. And so, you know, a consequence because you know they're lying, and they will still sometimes hold to their lie and still not tell the truth after that. And so for me, lying is the hardest thing that I've come across to have to deal with.
Yeah. Jessica feels emotionally betrayed by it as well. No, seriously. I mean, she's like,
I can't trust
our kids
you.
Our kids could kick her in the shin. She'd be like, that was dumb. No, I'm going to spank you. But if they lied to her, she'd be like, but I birthed you. I gave you life. How could you?
Sorry, I just want to ask the last question.
Go for it.
So, obviously, our kids are different and of different ages. Got one Jamie who is like, does his best to be Mr. Goody Two Shoes as well, but like seeks validation and approval all the time. Especially when he looks and he compares himself to Zarya and he's like, well, she did this. Am I being a good boy? Mm-hmm. And it's this external behavior.
Mm-hmm.
Although there is a benefit to his better behavior because it makes him easier to handle. So it's very, very tough because I'm like, am I raising a little legalist of fantasy? It's, yeah. And then he looks at her and he says, she's naughty. You know, she's naughty, but I did it.
For both grown-ups and kids, Ecclesiastes 4, verse 4, describes the sin of comparison. And that's something I would talk to him about. To say, you know what, Jamie? We do what is right in order to please God, not to make us better than other people. God says it's a sin when we compare ourselves with others to make ourselves look better. And so you, my boy, are actually going to end up getting consequences if you keep coming with these sinful and prideful comparisons with your sister, because that is not what is pleasing to God. Okay, good question.
So I know I missed a part of something you might have touched, but have you touched on the working at home for the husband?
Mm. No, I have not. Yes, thank you for reminding me about that.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Okay, so we have a unique situation now where the roles that we rightly understand are different between the husband and the wife, the father and the mother. The lines get blurred when the dad works from home because dad is around. And so it's not as easy as mom sees dad's away at the office, so she deals with the kids at home. But I think we need to remember that mom takes care of especially the younger years, primarily because it's her role, not primarily because she's the only one around to do it. So I believe that the pattern we have in Scripture, as kids get older, and if we're going to divide that into three age categories. So if this is preschool, kind of 0 to 5, and then this is primary school, so whatever it is, 6 to 12, or let's call it rather childhood. And then we have the teens. The nature of the kind of parenting that is required in the younger years means that this is disproportionately the role of the mother as the nurturer to be the one interacting with the child. Mom is going to do more work with the preschooler than dad. That, I think, is going to even out a little bit when, you know, between mom and dad in childhood. And I think when it comes to teens, dad takes the lead. Because I think that's where the way you are relating to your child is now more a matter of influence. It's counseling your child more than commanding your child. And so I think the respective roles that God gives us make that the default setting, which is not to be misunderstood as dad gets to take a nap for the first 5 years. So hear me out. Don't distort what I'm saying. It's recorded, so I have the words. Okay? Don't you wish that was available during your conflicts at home? But while the primary, not exclusive, but primary function falls on the mom in the younger years, I think when dad is at home in particular, he needs to recognize that he's still there to lead the family. So what I think that means in practice is dad's role is to provide for the family. That is an important function that he needs to fulfill. And if dad is getting interrupted every 5 minutes to deal with the toddler, he's never going to get his work done. He's not being a faithful steward in his employment. And so mom needs to free dad up to do that by shouldering the responsibility with the young child. So when dad works at home, by and large, he needs to be left to do that work. But I also think dad needs to recognize you are at home and your wife does face struggles. And so there are times, the exception, not the rule, that you need to step in and say, you know what? This is one of those days where your kid's like, it's on. I'm going to break your will and I'm going to laugh while I do it. Then as things start to get out of control, mom should certainly be able to come to dad and say, hey, it's not going well today. I've given, it's 8:30 and I've already given him 5 consequences. Then you need to go, okay, that's fine. I'm going to come out of my work area and I'm going to get involved. But then I think your kid needs to learn, you get the, at least the way that I've thought about it, you get the consequence for the disobedience and you get another consequence because you've made mom's work hard and dad's work hard. Mom can't do her role in the home and dad can't do the role, his work in the marketplace because of your sin. So there's your sin and there's the compounding severity of your sin. And so if dad has to interrupt his work, it's not just going to be an ordinary consequence. It's going to be an extraordinary pat on your bum. Anything you want to add to that?
Just a small thing, and yeah. Basically what you were saying. So for the moms, it is hard. You know, if you're at home all day and then dad's home as well, it is hard not to impose on him. But what is helpful is to remember that you're created first and foremost as his wife to be his helper. And the most helpful thing for your husband is to be able to get his work done. Because if you're at home with the kids, it means your husband is providing. And the best way for him to do that is for him to be an excellent employee. And so you can help him by allowing him to be an excellent employee, which means you work really hard during the day and as much as possible, let him be so he can work. And so if you need to go to the store, if your kids are little, you take them with. Or if you need to do something, you don't, you know, sometimes the dad's like, it's fine, you can leave them. But as far as possible, you let them work during the day because they need to. They need to be excellent employees so that they keep their jobs and they can continue to provide. And so that's a way for a mom to be a good helper to her husband, which is her primary role, and then the children and all the other roles that she has.
All right, I'm going to end
can
with...
I go?
Yeah, I was going to say, we need to relieve some babysitters and we need to eat. So you are excused. Thank you for your wisdom. Okay, final comment I want to make is just to recommend some resources to you. I really think very highly of this book by John MacArthur, What the Bible Says About Parenting. It's been republished under a couple different titles, and so sometimes I think you find it as Successful Christian Parenting or something like that. Basically, if there's a MacArthur book on parenting, it's the same book. So don't buy the two different books. But if there's a MacArthur book on parenting, buy it. It really is excellent, thoroughly biblical, really compelling, worth owning. Bruce Ray really makes an excellent case on discipline, withhold, not correction. I wouldn't put this on the essentials. But if you're really struggling with discipline, or if you're coming from a family background where this is never done and this is just a new concept to you, it might be worth reading through. Very good book, kind of like the book on making the case for those kinds of for that kind of physical chastisement as discipline. Then Lou Priolo is a biblical counselor, The Heart of Anger. This book is great because it works as much for you and your heart as it does for your kid. Really, so he's got excellent stuff in here. And so anger, we need to remember is not just shouting. Anger is blowing up, bottling up, and a whole range of emotions. So you're like, oh, my child isn't angry. They just get really frustrated because they're angry. Okay, so there's a lot more to anger than what you realize. This is a really good book. MacArthur's book I put on the essentials. I put this book on the essentials too. Really excellent. Then this, I think, if I was to pick one book that just really gets into these age categories of infant, toddler, and preschool really, really well, with some of the best practical counsel, The Faithful Parent by Martha Peace and Stuart Scott, both exceptional counselors in their own right. Also, just a really simple, well-written, but very practical, helpful book. Even though it is written by a lady and primarily targeted at moms, I think dads will benefit from this too, but Don't Make Me Count to Three by Ginger Hubbard. Previously went under Ginger Plowman, but that's fine. Her ambition was to take Ted Tripp's book, Shepherding a Child's Heart, which, like I said to you, was the groundbreaking book. I don't think it's an essential book anymore. I think it has been refined and better articulated by some of the other books that are now out there. So it's a good book, and if you have it, read it. It's wonderful. But I think it's being distilled through other authors so that it's no longer an essential. But her ambition was to say, okay, I love Ted Tripp's book. It's totally changed my life. But what does that look like? She's like, I get you. Shepherd my child's heart. I want to do that. But what words should come out of my mouth? And so that was her ambition. So she came up with this book, Don't Make Me Count to Three. Really, really excellent book. And then she followed it up a couple years later with, I can't believe you just said that, okay? And this book, Jessica and I have really thoroughly enjoyed and benefited from. We even got it on an audiobook, so that when we were driving on our annual vacation down to my parents, we had like a 10-hour drive. We could listen to that. And it's great because our kids could hear what was coming for them as well. But she gets into everything from whining, lying, tattling, defying, manipulating, interrupting, complaining, blame shifting, teasing, aggravating, bragging, arguing, yelling, gossiping, bickering, right? A lot of practical stuff. And what's so good about this book is she exemplifies, and please don't turn it into a formula. Like, you have to use her words. But she just gives you good examples of, this is what thoroughly biblical instruction looks like. When you get down into the heart and you start drawing out their heart with good questions, showing them what the biblical alternative should have been, and helping them do the put off and put on work of the heart in the midst of your discipline. So this is, I found this immeasurably valuable for its practical value and its tips. And then, kind of as a cheat sheet for those two books, there is this called Wise Words for Moms, which again, dads can use too. But it's the kind of thing that's helpful to put on your fridge or keep somewhere that you can see it. She's got the child's behavior, so like they've got bad friendships. Here are some heart-probing questions that you can ask your child. Here is how you reprove them by saying, this is what is wrong. This is what you need to put off. Here is how you encourage them. This is what you need to put on. And here are some Bible verses. Again, as the kid gets older, that's going to become more helpful to you. But it's just super practical when you're like, okay, I get you. I need to discipline better. My parents didn't do that well, so I don't know what that looks like. How do I do that? This is a wonderful cheat sheet. Super helpful. So I would totally buy this. Mom and dad, you can benefit a lot from that. Okay. I'm going to close us in prayer now, not because we need to stop talking now, but because we want to start eating, and because those very kind people who've been looking after our offspring for the last couple hours, I'm sure would like a break. They love our kids, but they didn't make them, and so we bear the responsibility that they don't. Let's pray. Father, Father, thank you for this time together. I trust that the wisdom of your word would give us both encouragement and hope so that we feel optimistic. We leave here knowing if we do things your way, it'll be the best way for our family. But I pray also that we will leave here not only encouraged and hopeful, but with the wisdom to do things the right way, to actually live out your plan for marriage and parenting, and especially when it comes to training our kids through discipline and instruction in these younger years. Make us wise so that we will be effective, because we want to be used by you as your primary means of bringing our children to faith in our Lord Jesus Christ. And so we ask for your grace. Forgive us for where we've done wrong, but help us to go forward and do what is right, as we ask in Jesus' name. Amen. All right. Thank you all. Okay. Jessica will give you instructions on food when she returns. Yeah.